We're holding in Psachim on page Bay's three lines from the bottom, middle of verse Dalad. We were talking yesterday about the concept that a person should use Lashon Nekiya whenever possible, although the Gemara had said that another consideration is using Lashon Tzara, so that when you have a choice between Lashon Tzara and Lashon Nekiya, then generally Lashon Tzara should win out, even if it's less nutty. So now the Gemara tells a few incidents in this connection. There were two Talmidim sitting in front of Rav and learning Torah. Rav Omar, one of them says, after a while of learning, this teaching, this discussion in Torah has made me like a tired Dover Acha. Rashi explains the word Misanfan means tired. The Aruch and Rabbi Hananel here give a couple of other possibilities. One of them is that it means stuffed. But whatever it is, he compares himself to a stuffed or tired Dover Acha. The other one compares himself to an overtired or stuffed goat. And then Rav wouldn't speak with the first one because he had used an improper expression like that. Why is he comparing himself, of all things, to a Dover Acha? So there's one of the Mephoshim says that it's not that Rav never spoke with his Talmud again, but he didn't speak to him for 30 days, meaning he considered him to be like in a certain state of nidhi. Another example, there were two Talmidim sitting and learning Torah in front of Hillel, one of them was Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, and we don't know who the other one was. Others say the two Talmidim were in a later generation sitting in front of Rebbe, and one of them was Rabbi Yochanan, the Amor. Anyway, Chad Omalahu, so one of them starts the discussion by asking, why is it that when it comes to harvesting grapes, you have to do it in a state of Tara, versus when you're harvesting olives, you can do it Betuma? Now, the technical reason behind, Rashi points out, the word boitzrin and moskin are the two terms respectively used for harvesting grapes and olives. In English, we use the word harvesting for all kinds of crops, but in Lashon Kodesh, you have different verbs for different kinds of things. Anyway, the reason behind it is actually explained in Masechta Shabbos. When it comes to grapes, what happens is, sometimes you may, first of all, you want all the juice from the grapes. You don't want any of it to go to waste. So you may well use baskets lined with tar in order to catch every drop. So therefore, the juice that comes out of the grapes is considered choshuv by you, and therefore it's one of the shiva mashkim, and it makes the grapes susceptible to being the kabel turma. Whereas when it comes to the olives, it's not really so much like that. You have a juice that oozes out of them at the beginning. It's called moihel, but it's not really important enough. All it does is it helps soften the olives, but it's not significant enough that you would go and use tar-lined baskets for the purpose. So that's the technical reason behind it. The Gemara also mentions a point over there that sometimes you come to harvest your grapes. You want to check whether they're ready to be harvested yet. You take a couple of grapes and you squeeze them to see how much juice is coming out of them. And then the juice squirts onto the other grapes. And when you're harvesting them, they may well still be wet. So those considerations are the technical reason behind this difference. But one of these Talmidim was asking why that is. V'chad Omer, the other one, uses the expression, v'pnei ma boitzrin v'tara, v'ein moskin v'tara. Why is it that the harvest of the olives does not have to be done v'tara? So the first one uses the word tumah, the second one just says, v'ein moskin v'tara. Omer, so the Rebbe, Hillel, or Rebbe as the case may be, said, I'm certain about this one, which one we'll talk about in a second, that he will be giving decisions in halacha and teaching Torah to the Jewish people. Omru, and they said, sure enough, not very long past before he was teaching and passing in halacha for the Jewish people. So whether it was Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai or whether it was Rabbi Yochanan. Now, which one of the two was it? But Pashtus, we would understand that the one who used the word tahara on both sides is the one that Hillel or Rebbe praised. On the other hand, Marsha talks about in Chiddush HaLochas that and brings from the Ran, maybe not necessarily, because on the other hand, so there's a few different ways of looking at it. It is true. So one way is, we did learn before about Loshen Ketzara. The fact is to say Ein Moskin the Tara is longer than Moskin the Tuma, so maybe that's not such a good thing. Maybe the one who said Moskin the Tuma is the better one because he used Loshen Ketzara. On the other hand, the Ran makes a point that you could also argue that saying the expression Moskin the Tuma could be misleading. It could be, it could falsely imply that you have to do it the Tuma, and therefore that's no good. Yet, so therefore, according to that, the one who said a Moskin the Tara would be the better one because he's not only using Loshin Nakia, it's a little bit longer, but he needs to do that in order that there shouldn't be any misunderstanding. So two different ways of understanding what happened. Okay. Another example, Hanu Tlosa Kahani. There were three Kohenim when the Beis Mikdash was still standing, and they were talking among themselves about how much they each received from the Lechem Apon. Chad Omer Lahu Higiani Kepoel. One of them says, I received a piece of the Lechem Aponim the size of a bean. V'chad Omer Higiani Kizayis. The second one says, I received a piece the size of a Kizayis. V'chad Omer Higiani Kiznab HaVatar. The third one says, I received a piece the size of a lizard's tail. So of all things, he's comparing the Lachan Aponim to a lizard's tail, which is the Tameh. Bod Gu'achrav, so they checked in to find about his Yichus, Umotsuboy Shemet Psul. And they found a trace of a Psul in him. They found, so Rashi says it means they found he was a Cholo, so therefore he can't do the Avodah anymore. So in other words, because he spoke wrongly, therefore they ended up checking, and they ended up finding this wrong thing. Tosfos gives a different explanation from Rabbeinu Hananel that actually Shemetz Psul is where the word Shemetz is related to, we find by the Chet Ego, L'shimtza B'kamehem, and therefore what it means is they found that he had worshipped Avodah Zarah at some point, which makes him possible to ever serve in the Beis Mikdash. By the way, I mean, how comes it that the Kohenim are getting different size portions? On the face of it, everybody should be getting the same portion. But the Pashtus, you could say, Balabatish, they're not necessarily all from the same Mishmar. They could be comparing notes of what happened different times when each of them was in his Mishmar. But there is Chassam Sofer in his Kedushim over here, gives a vote about it, that each one of them got the same size, but each one is saying how he perceived it. One of them is saying, I got a piece the size of a bean. The second one says, I also did, but as far as I'm concerned, that piece the size of a bean is as significant to me as if it was a whole kazayis. And the third one is saying, nah, it's like a zonov, it's like an appendage, like something extra and unnecessary Anyway, so the Gemara asks, why are they checking into his yichus or whether he worshipped Avodah Zarah b'chlal? Valtanya, we learn in a brisa, ein boit, tnan, really, it's a Mishnah in Kedushin, ein boitkin min amizbeach olamayla. When it comes to, you have in Perek Asori Yuchsin, the last Perek of Kedushin, it talks about there are certain cases where you have to check into a family's yichus before you're allowed to intermarry into that family. In some cases, you have to check a few generations back to make sure that there's no psula yichus. A kohen wants to marry into a family, which has a reputation of being yichusim, so he's going to have to make sure that there are in fact no psulim among them. But so usually the Mishnah says over there you have to check a couple of generations, you have to check like two or three generations back. However, the Mishnah says over there, Ein Boitkin min HaMizbeach L'mayla, if you reach a Kohen who actually served in the Beis Mikdash on the Mizbeach, you don't have to check back any further, because the Mishnah tells us at the end of Midos that one of the main things the Sanhedrin Dola would do on a day-to-day basis, now they're doing all kinds of things, they're the court of last resort when people have a Shiloh that they can't answer, they're the court of first resort for certain cases involving the Melech and the Kohen Gadol or whatever, but a common thing that they're doing on an ongoing basis is checking the yichus of the Kohenim before they're ever allowed to serve in the Beis Mikdash. So once they've gone through that vetting, then we know for sure there are no psulim in them, and therefore later on when you're checking about their children or grandchildren or whatever, you don't have to check any further than them because you know that he was a Kohen Miyos. So by the same token over here, this Kohen served in the Beis Mikdash, that's why he got a portion of the Lechem upon him, so why are they checking into his yichus in the first place? So the answer is, the Gemara says, Vaitema Shemet Psul Ela Ema Shach. Psul. Don't say that the word was that they found Shemetz Psul, which Rashi says means they found he was a cholo, and Tosfos says means they found he had worshipped Avodah Zarah. It's true, they have no business checking into that, because if there was any such thing, the Sanhedrin would have caught it at the time, but rather, they found shachatz psul. Shachatz is another word for gaiva, so it means they found that he was a bal gaiva. Rashi says gasi ruach and mevazes a kodshim. He's making fun of the kodshim by using such derogatory wording about them. In which case, then you have a gemara in Menachos Rashi refers to that says that any kohen who is not moide b'kulon, who does not agree to the validity of all the avodas in the mishmikdash, he claims that only some of them are valid and necessary, and other ones are not, is possible to serve in the mishmikdash. Now, that's not the kind of thing Sanhedrin would catch at the time, because that's an attitude that a person could develop later in life. So when they saw that he spoke like this about the Lechem Aponim and called it Kiznav Alatah, then they realized, you know what, he's not the kind of person who deserves to serve in the Mishmikdash, because his attitude toward the Avodah is flawed. The Boisema, or another answer, you could say, it's true, usually they wouldn't be checking into a person's yichus once he started serving in the Mishmikdash, but Shiny Hosm, it's different in this case, the Iyuhu, the Ara Anafshe, because he's the one who made it bad for himself. So in other words, by using this kind of expression, he demonstrated, Rashi says, that to begin with, obviously the Sanhedrin missed something when they checked him out, and if they had checked more thoroughly, they would have found now the Shemitz Psul that they found now, and like this, if he had been quiet, if he hadn't spoken up, they never would have thought to look for it, but now already that there's a Reyesa, then they had reason to check again, and to realize that evidently the Sanhedrin missed something. Okay. Another story involving the way a person speaks and the pashtus, the connection with it, is that just like in this story, this Kohen exposed himself as a no goodnik by the way he spoke, so it's going to be in the next story. There was a guy who used to go up to Yerushalayim and eat the Korban Pesach over there. He would pretend to be a Jew, and they would include him in a group to eat the Korban Pesach. One time he comes before Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. Now Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, Tosfos points out, actually the Gemara itself is going to mention at the end of the story, lived in Nitzivin. Nitzivin, Tosfos points out, is a city in Chutzlar. It's a city, nowadays it's in like northern Iraq or southern Turkey or something like that. So this guy happened to be in front of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, and he starts boasting. Amalei, he says to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, "Ksiv kol ben necha lo yechaboy, ksiv kol oro lo yechaboy." Here you have your Torah says that any ben necha. Now, in halacha, actually, ben necha doesn't necessarily—I mean, it does include a goy, but it includes also primarily ben necha. And that pasuk refers to a yid who worships Avodah Zarah. Shenisnaklu ma'isav lo'avu shavashmayim. He acts like a stranger towards Hashem. But in a Pashto sense, it does mean a goy as well. And it also says, kol oro lo yechaboy, which definitely includes a goy who does not have a bismillah. So therefore, so your Torah is saying, I have no business eating from the Korban Pesach. Yet I'm eating from the best of the best. So he's boasting that he put one on over the Jewish people. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira asks him. Now, evidently, the situation was Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira couldn't directly go and dispatch the guy himself, so he has to find a way in which he's going to end up exposing himself to the Jews in Yerushalayim, and then they can deal with him over there. So he asks him, did they ever give you from the tail of the sheep? Now the tail, certain breeds of sheep, in particular the ones that they use as korbanos, they store fat in their tails, and that part is a very delicious, it's the best part of the animal. But when it comes to korbanos, it's offered on the mizbeach. An interesting point, by the way, in that regard is, it's not chelev. Usually we think of all the fats are offered on the mizbeach, or chelev, and we're not allowed to eat them. This particular part is not chelev, yet it's brought on the mizbeach. Anyway, because the best, in the sense, kol chayv of Hashem, all the best goes to Hashem. So he asked him, did you ever eat from the alya? Amalei loy. So the goy says no. Amalei, so Rabbi Yehuda tells him, okay, kad salkas hosam, next time you go up there to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim, emalahu sofuli me'alya, tell them to give you some of the alya. Meaning, in other words, that, again, this way they'll figure out what's going on over here. Marshal and Marsha talk about an interesting point over here, which is, what was the goy thinking? So Marshal explains, and Marsha adds more detail about it in Chedusha Halachas, and then a little more here in Chedusha Agadis. Basically, this goy was under the impression, maybe, that when the Torah is saying, kol oro lo yechaboy, and so forth, it means davka of the best parts of it. So therefore, the Behotim and Veseda is telling them, you know what? You think you tricked them? You didn't trick them. The fact is that, yeah, the regular parts of the animal you would be allowed to eat. Just not the best parts. They never gave you the best parts because they know you are good. You tell them to give you the best parts and we'll see what happens. And Maharsha says, in fact, that's why Rabbi Yehuda ben Veseda sees the guy is boasting that I eat in shufri. So in other words, he was under the impression that he's always getting the best. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Veseda is telling him, no, you didn't get the best. The best is the Aliyah and they've been withholding that from you. Which by the way, Mephoshim point out, now the Korban Pesach doesn't necessarily have to be a sheep. It could be a goat as well. If it's a goat, it doesn't have a fat tail, which is offered on the Mizbeach. However, most people brought their Korbanos Pesach as sheep, and therefore the Behotim and Veseda could assume that the group that this guy ends up with is also gonna bring a sheep. Kisolik Lahosim, when he goes there to Eretz Yisrael, Omrulahuma Alya Sopuli, he tells them, I want you to give me from the Alya. Omrulay, they said to him, my comic, what are you talking about? Alya the Gavoya Sopuli. The Alya is offered to Hashem on the Mizbeach. Omrulay Man Omrulahuma. So they ask him, who ever gave you the idea to ask for such a thing? Omrulahuma, you heard of it, Mesena Omrulay. No less than you heard of it, Mesena, the great Tana told me. Amri, they thought to themselves, my hide, come on, what's this going on in front of us? Something fishy over here. Bodku Achrav, they checked into him, Vashkechua de Urkechavimu, they found that he was a goy, the Kaplua, and so they executed him. On what grounds are they executing him? There's a few interesting possibilities that the Mephoshim bring up. One is because he went into parts of the Beis Mikdash that he's not supposed to. You have the beyond the chayil, which is surround beyond the surig, the wooden fence surrounding the chayil. Goyim are not allowed to go. This guy went with his group to bring the Korban Pesach and went beyond there, and therefore he's chayiv misa. They actually had signs on the surig. They actually found a couple of them in archaeological excavations around the Har HaBayis. They had signs in various languages, including Greek and Latin and whatnot. Warning goyim, don't go beyond this point, or you're mischayev benafshei. So that's one reason, that would be one grounds to execute him. Another point that some mephoshim make is, it's a matter of gezer. Given that a goy is not allowed to eat from the Korban Pesach, then he eating from it amounts to stealing. And that's one of the shev mitzvot neneach, and all the shev mitzvot neneach, they're chayev misa. Practically speaking, there may have also been, you know, they may have also taken into consideration, I mean, why would the guy schlep all the way from the Tzivin to Yerushalayim just to eat a Korban Pesach and think that he put one on over the Jews? And there may have been good reason to think that he's a spy or he's doing who knows what, so they would have had reason to want to get rid of him anyway. Anyway, Shochu Leila Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, they sent a message to Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, Shlom Loch Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, peace to you, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, to Atbin Nitzivin, you live in Nitzivin, which is hundreds of miles away, Umitzudos Kaprus of Yerushalayim, and your net is spread as far as Yerushalayim, that you were able to catch this guy in your net from hundreds of miles away. Now, Tosfos brings up the point. Why isn't Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira himself go on Aliyah LeRegel, and then he'll recognize the guy, and he'll tell the Sanhedrin, or whoever's running things over there, and then why does he have to do this whole trickery? So Tosfos gives a few possibilities. One is that maybe he didn't have karka. The Gemara explains in Masechta Chagiga that somebody who doesn't own karka, somebody who doesn't own land, is potter from Aliyah LeRegel. The Gemara over there learns it from Sukkim. An interesting thing that some Achronim point out is, doesn't every year have a certain ownership of karka in Eretz Yisrael, except for a ger. So how does Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, we talk about, for example, every yid owns four amos in Eretz Yisrael. There's a famous explanation that when Avram bought the Ma'aris Machpelah, the price he paid for it, Arba Meis Shekel Kesef, where over La Socher would be enough to buy an area of 600,000 square amos, one square amma for every yid. Anyway, there's an interesting vote that someone says on this. The Gemara in Sanhedrin has a discussion about the Mason Shehechye Yechezkel. We know the sword Yechezkel is brought to a valley full of dry bones, and Hashem tells him to be Mechaye Mason. Who were these people that the bones came from? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin has a whole discussion about it and has several different opinions. One opinion is that they were from the Bnei Ephraim, the ones who left Mitzrayim 30 years early. They miscalculated. They thought the 400 years begins from when Hashem told Abraham, Geri Yezaracha, which was when Abraham was 70. Really, it actually counts from when Yitzchak was born, which is when Abraham was 100. So they left 30 years early, and they went through the land of the Plishtim, and the Plishtim ended up massacring them. This is one reason why it says, why by Yitzchak Mitzrayim, but when Nochem Alekim Jerach Eretz Plishtim, because Hashem was concerned that the Jews are going to see the bones of the Bnei Ephraim over there, and they're going to be afraid and return to Mitzrayim. Anyway, so there's one Manda Omer there in Sanhedrin that says that these Bnei Ephraim were the ones who now, 1,000 or so years later, Yechezkel was Mechayim Mason. And when the Gemara says that, Rabbi Yehuda ben, the Gemara also has a discussion over there whether it actually happened in real life or was it just a vision of a Nevuah. So the Gemara says over there, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda got up and said, absolutely, it happened in real life. In fact, I'm descended from one of those people who the Gemara has a discussion what happened to them after that. Did they just say Shira and then die again? Did they continue to have children? So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda says, yes, they had children and descendants. I'm one of their descendants, and I can show you the tefillin that I inherited from my grandfather who was one of those people. Anyway, the point is, therefore, point that, putting all that together, then it would come out, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda is descended from these Bnei Ephraim who left Mitzrayim early. Now, they didn't get a chelik in Eretz Yisrael because they never made it to Eretz Yisrael. They never even left Mitzrayim together with the rest of Yitzchak Mitzrayim. Therefore, we can say that it's a cute vort, but the vort is, therefore, maybe Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda, as Tosfos is saying over here, doesn't have chelik in Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, Tosfos says also he may have been old, and again, a person is only chayiv in Aliyah L'Regel only if he can walk on his own 2 feet. Also, Tosfos says another point, that the city where he lived, Nitzivin, is in Chutz Laretz, and people from Chutz Laretz are not necessarily required to make Aliyah L'Regel. There's some discussion among the Foshim where we get that from exactly, but that's one explanation, is that people who live in Chutz Laretz are not chayiv in Aliyah L'Regel. Anyway, for one or more of those reasons, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda himself didn't go, but he arranged this whole strategy in order to catch the guy. Okay. More about Loshen Nekiyah. The Gemara continues. Rav Kahana Cholosh. Rav Kahana was not feeling well. Shadrur Rabbanim, Rabbi Yeshua Breder of Idi. So the other Chachamim sent Rabbi Yeshua ben Idi as a messenger. And Rabbi Yeshua Breder of Idi. Amilei Zil B'doik Mai Dinei. Go check out how is his din. In other words, how is he doing? Is he recovering? Is he recovering or not? He went and found Rav Kahana had passed away. So he ripped his clothing. Then he turned the ripped side backwards. The kind of clothing they wore in those days was something where you didn't necessarily have a defined front and back, so therefore you could easily turn the clothing around. And he was crying and going. Amulei, so they asked him, Noch Nafshe, what, did he pass away? Omulahoin, so he answers them, Atun Kamritu Amnolai Kamina. You're saying it, I didn't want to say it outright, because the Pasuk says, Motzi Dibo Hukhsil, the one who gives out bad news is a fool, so I didn't want to be the one who actually says. Now Rashi explains in that case why, when he tore his clothes, why did he turn the tear backwards? Because they didn't want to shock them too much. So like this, it would kind of be breaking the news gently to them. Also, Marsha says another point. If he actually walked in front of them with the Kriya, then it would amount to be Motzi Diva. Because, okay, he's not saying it with words, but standing over there with torn clothing itself amounts to the same thing. So they're saying Noch Nafshe, but that's a question. That's not Motzi Diva. So therefore, nobody over here is Motzi Diva. They only said it as a question, and he didn't actually say it verbally, and he at least turned the ripped side backwards so that they would get a hint of what's going on, but he wouldn't be saying it with age. Another example about Loshen Nekiyah, and here from this example, we're going to see that not always that they're within Loshen Nekiyah itself, you have to find the most effective way to say it. Yochanan Chakuka Nofakal Kiryasa. Yochanan Chakuka went out to the villages to see how the crops are doing. Why is he called Chakuka? So Rashi just said that was his nickname. Tosfos brings two other explanations. One from Aben Hanano, that he was a sofer, where soferim are called in a number of places in Tanakh, mechoitet, right? So, because they engrave things. And also another possibility for the Ri says that he was from the city of Chukot, which is a city mentioned in Sefer Yehoshua in the north of Eretz Yisrael, in the territory, I think, of Shevet Asher or Shevet Naphtali. So maybe he came from there. Anyway, he also, when he came back from the villages, Os Omrule, they asked him, Chitin Nasu Yofus, has the wheat been growing well? Omulahu, now he didn't want to tell them that the fact is that the wheat had not grown well, but he didn't want to say that outright. So instead he answered, Sa'udin Nasu Yofus, the barley came out well. Omrulai, but they told him that's not the appropriate way to say it. Say Uvaso the Susan Lachamodin. If you're telling us the barley is good, you might as well go and tell that and tell the news to the horses and the donkeys. As we find by Shlomo HaMelech, where it describes that barley and straw were being used as food for the horses and for the rechesh, another kind of fast animals that they would ride. So the Gemara asks him, I have a leather maimer. Well, what could he have said, given that he can't say the wheat is no good, because he didn't want to be motzi diva, and they're telling him, don't say sa'odim nasu yafas, so what should he have said? And the answer is, have a little meme, a shtaka naso chitin yafas. He could have said last year's wheat crop was good. And they would understand by implication that this year's was not. Inami, adoshim naso yafas. Or he could have said the lentils came out good. Lentils being a maicholadam. So therefore, that would have been the right way to say it. Now, the fact is that barley is used for people food as well. After all, Marshall points out, it is one of the shivas aminim. Nevertheless, though, mainly it's meant for maicholadam, and mainly it's not meant for maicholadam, unlike the other two. The Chassam Sofer gives an interesting point over here. He says they were also telling him like this. If you're telling us the barley is good, yes, it's true, of course, we can eat barley, and it is one of the shivas aminim and all that. But when would you eat barley? Only if there's no wheat available. So by you saying sa'odim nasim yafas, effectively you're saying the same thing, that the wheat is no good. In that case, you haven't gained anything by not directly saying that the chitim are no good. If you wanted to say it in the proper way, you should have said last year's wheat was good. That wouldn't necessarily have to mean this year's wheat is no good. After all, old wheat is better than new wheat. Or you could have said, Abdoshim Nasu Yafas, and fine, that also doesn't directly mean that the wheat is no good. It would mean, okay, you know, you eat wheat, you use wheat to make bread, and you use lentils for other purposes, so therefore, so saying the lentils are good doesn't necessarily equal the wheat is no good. So you would have done better to say it one of those two ways. There's a long piece where the Rebbe's father talks about, starts by talking about the union of wheat and barley as far as they are with the Korban HaOmer and the Shtei HaLechem, and then in the middle of it he digresses and explains and gives an explanation of this Gemara along with another piece on Daf Yud Gimel of this Masechta that also mentions the same Yochanan and Chakukah in connection with some Chametz, and he has a long, long explanation about what all of this symbolizes, the Pnimis and Yonin, that the wheat The wheat represents the wheat represents chokhma, the barley represents bina, and he has more of a connection with barley. But they tell him, on the other hand, that belongs more to the behemisha side of things. It belongs more to olam atoyu and whatnot. And you should have said adoshim. And he has a whole long explanation, alpi kabbalah, of what was going on over here. Okay, another story involving not wanting to give out bad news directly. Rav Bar Achua did a Pchia or Bar Achse. So to begin with, as background to the following story, Rav was both the son of Rav Chia's brother and the son of his sister. What happened was, Rashi explains like this. There was a man named Rav Acha Mikafri, or actually the Gemara in Sanhedrin that Rashi is referring to actually calls him Rav Acha Karsala from Kafri, whatever, anyway. He had four children with his first wife. Meanwhile, then his wife died or divorced her. He married a woman who already had a child of her own. This woman that he married had a daughter of her own named Ima. So now now you have a blended family with the boys from one side and the girl and this girl from the other. Later on, Rav Acha and his second wife had a child together, which is Rav Chia. So Rav Chia is a half brother from his father's side of the four earlier children, Ivu, Chana, Shila, and Marta. He's also a half brother to the sister from the other side. They're brother and sister on the mother's side. When everybody grew up, then Ivu, one of the ones from the boy's side, married Ima from the girl's side, and of course they're allowed to. They're not blood relatives at all. So, and their son was Rab. So So therefore, Rav Chiya was a double uncle to Rav. He was his uncle from his father's side, being Ivu's half-brother, as well as his uncle from his mother's side, being Ima's half-brother. So now, with that background, Ki Solik Lahasam, when Rav moved to there, meaning Eretz Yisrael, when he moved from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, now both Rav and Rav Chiya, that whole family, was from Babel. Rav Chiya had come from Babel to Eretz Yisrael some years earlier, and now Rav came to Eretz Yisrael as well. Omale, so Rav Chiya asked him, Ivu Kayam, is Ivu still alive? Omale, Ima Kayemis. And Rashi explains that he's asking as a question, as a rhetorical question, Ima Kayemis. Rashi explains like this. Both Ivu and Ima had passed away by that. But Rav didn't want to, when he asked him, is Ivu still alive? He didn't want to directly answer that he passed away. So instead, he asked with a rhetorical question, why are you only asking about Ivu? Shouldn't you be asking about Ima as well, she being your half-sister also? So Rav Chiya asks, Omale Ima Kayemes, okay, so is Ima alive? Omale, and Rav answers him back, Ivu Abba Kayem. What about Ivu or Abba, really, Mephoshim point out, we shouldn't be calling him Ivu, you can't call his father by his direct name, but anyway, is he alive, meaning you seem to have forgotten about the first question you asked me, where, yes, you asked the second question, but you didn't wait for the answer to the first one. So therefore, in other words, it was a way of evading things to make Rav Chiya realize that, in fact, both of them have passed away. Rashi brings a second explanation, which is that both statements of Rav are statements rather than questions. When he asks him, Ivu Kayem, he answers as a statement, Ima Kayemis, and vice versa with the other. However, Rashi says it's hard to say that. It would come out then that Rav is saying something not true. How can you say Ima Kayemis when she's not Kayem, when she already passed away? And the same thing with the other one. Tosfos brings a whole different girsa from Rabbeinu Chanan. That Rav Chiya asked, Ivu Kayem, or Abba Kayem, according to this Gersa, is my father alive? And he answers him, Omale Abba Kayem, and he answers him, my father is alive. Then he asks him, Ima Kayemis, is my, Rav Chiya's mother alive? And Rav answers, my mother is alive. So therefore, again, he's hinting to Rav Chiya that his own parents, Rav Chiya's own parents, have passed away, but that Rav's parents, which are Rav Chiya's brother and sister, are still alive and well. So now, according to that Girsa, therefore, then we understand, Marsha explains this a little further, and why the Gemara has to give us first the introduction of how Rav was related to Rav Chiya, because that makes it understandable. When Rav Chiya is asking, is my father alive, why would it even be relevant to Rav, for Rav to answer, my father is alive? If you have two random people, and one of them asks, is my father alive, would it be derech eretz to say, my father is alive? But since Rav's parents are Rav Chiya's brother and sister, respectively, then it makes sense. It's a menschlicha thing for Rav to answer. For Rav to answer, your brother is alive and your sister is alive, and then from that he'll understand that his parents were not. As far as the girsa that we have in front of us, which is Rashi's girsa, then Tosfos says the reason why we need to have that preamble about how Rav and Rav Chiya were related is because if he just answered because if he just answers Abba Kayem, then he would think. Then you would think, so maybe they're talking about the same person. People sometimes call their grandfather their father as well, and the same thing with mothers. So therefore the Gemara has to add this detail that Rav was a double nephew of Rav Chiya in order to make it understandable why Rav couldn't just answer according to Rashi's Girsa. Why can't he just answer Abba Kayem, referring to his own father, because then Rav Chiya would misunderstand and think that he means Rav's grandfather, which is Rav Chiya's father. Anyway, so either way, the point is Rav Chiya realized that they had passed away. According to the Girsa of Rashi, it's that he found that now his half-brother and his half-sister had passed away. According to Rabbeinu Chananel's Girsa, if he found out that his own parents had passed away. But by the time this happened, it was long after they'd passed away. It's called in Halacha Shmur Rechoika. It's a long time since it happened. So Omale Lashame, so Rav Chiya says to his attendant, Chaloitz Limin Olai, help me take off my shoes as avelos for my relatives, v'holich achrei kela lebeis hamerchatz, and carry my clothing after me to the bathhouse so that I can take a bath. So So Shmamina Gimel. Therefore, he did that in order that we should learn three halachas from what he did. Shmamina Oval Osir Min Ilas Sandal. The first one we learn is that an Oval is Osir to wear shoes. That's why Priya tells his attendant to take his shoes off. And the chiddush of it is that even with a Shmur Rechoika, like we're talking about over here, he still has to take off his shoes. Or Shmamina Shmur Rechoika in an Ahegas of the Yemachad. But we also see that when it comes to a Shmur Rechoika, where the news was received more than 30 days later, then the Avelos is Noyeg for only one day. That's why he's not saying that I have to sit Shiva. Or Shmamina Mikta Sayem Kekuloi. And we also see that a little bit of the day is considered like a whole thing. So once he takes off his shoes and Prab is Avelos for a short time, then already he's able to go to the bathhouse and take a bath, which an Ovo usually wouldn't be allowed to do, because at that point the Avelos is over. And all those three things are in fact the halal. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Go'ola. Yud Beis Elul. The Seder of the Geula that Eva talks about in a letter, which is mentioned in is going to be, first the Beis HaMikdash is going to be built, then is going to be Kibbutz Golias, and then is going to be Tchias HaMesim, and Tchias HaMesim specifically is going to be 40 years after Kibbutz Golias. There are other places where it talks about that the exceptional tzaddikim will have an earlier Tchias HaMesim, but the general run of the mill Jews, Amcha Beis Yisrael, were saying are going to have Tchias HaMesim 40 years after Kibbutz Golias. Finishing up on halachas about Tfilas Mincha, if you come on Erev Shabbos to Shul for Mincha, and the Tzibur already davened Kabbalah Shabbos, or already started Yom Tov davening, so that would mean, well, as far as Shabbos, that means they already said Mizmor Shir L'Yom Shabbos. Yom Tov, they already said Baruch Hu, or the Alter Rebbe says Shabbos, it would also be Baruch Hu. Then at that point, a person shouldn't daven Mincha in the Shul, because it would be contradicting what they're doing. You should go outside the Shul and daven. And then if he hears the Shliach Tzibur saying Baruch Hu, he shouldn't answer, because if he does, if he answers Baruch Hu with them, then how can he daven a weekday Shemoneh Esrei? If he does mistakenly answer, then he's going to have to daven a double Ma'ariv, as the usual case where a person mistakenly misses a tefillah. If he comes right before Kabbalah Shabbos or Yom Tov davening, he may not be able to finish Shemoneh Esrei before they start, but that's fine. He's beginning the Heter, and therefore he can finish off his Shemoneh Esrei even after they said Mizmor Shir or Baruch Hu or whatever it is. I'm going to make a catch on what's up for the